Now, back to the Jack and Tom Show on 1320 WILA.
Welcome back. Jack Ebling here with Dave Benton, the Jack and Tom Show, 1320 WILS. Tom Crawford up north this weekend, and he's really sad he couldn't join us for our next guest. And that is college football guru Phil Steele. And having written for just about every college football magazine imaginable, except Phil Steele's magazine, I can say that I have the utmost respect for the job he does and the incredible amount of information. I used to write for something called Blue Ribbon College Basketball, and that was somewhat similar in terms of the mountain of information. And the fact that so many media people keep this magazine handy will tell you a lot. Hello, Phil. How are you?
Hey, real good. How about yourself this morning? And I tell you what, appreciate the kind comments, especially coming from someone like yourself.
Well, I wanted to talk to you about a lot of things. And we've been taking a couple of calls, Phil, from our listeners. And I want to start with one we got this morning from China, of
wow.
all places.
Wow.
And the American Flag Football League of Beijing. And they want to know about USC, about the sanctions. We had a couple calls about that. And also what that means to the balance of power in college football.
Well, I think it's really going to redirect the balance of power because USC has been so dominant in college football. I think next year, the year after that, in fact, for from 2011 through about 2015, USC may just go to the middle of the pack of the Pac-10 with those 30 scholarship losses and players apt to transfer. Now, the key to this season is going to be the amount of transfers. Right now, if the team that is on hand plays this season and no more transfers go out, I still think USC has an excellent shot at winning the Pac-10. Granted, they can't go to a bowl game, but it could be an us-versus-them mentality. When you look at the schedule, they get most of the toughest teams at home this year as opposed to playing them on the road last year. And I think you may say USC play with its hair on fire all season long. But if between now and the start of the season, five or six more guys opt to transfer, including a couple of starters, then it's a team that could have some trouble. And after a first couple of losses, that us-versus-them mentality may wear off. So I picked USC. Tied for the top in the Pac-10 with Oregon. I'm hoping they don't have any more transfers before the start of the season.
Phil, Alabama looks so good, and not just Mark Ingram returning, but the way Nick Saban has built this program. I'm sure you see them being a factor all year. Who are the challengers for a national championship in your mind?
Well, I've got Alabama number three coming into the season, okay. And a lot of folks scratching their head over that. And I'll say that if I was an AP voter and voting my top 25 poll for the first week of the season, I'd have Alabama number one. They're the defending national champs, and as you pointed out, they've got a lot coming back. Last year, they only had four starters back on offense. This year, they have eight. They've got an experienced quarterback. Julio Jones is healthy. Best pair of running backs in the country in Ingram and Richardson. Now, defensively, they have just two starters back, but they're in much better shape than the numbers would indicate. You look at a player like Marcel Darius, who did not start last year, but will be a top five pick for next year's draft. So this is a very talented Alabama team. And frankly, I've got them favored some games slightly in every single one of their games. But I just think the schedule's too tough for them this year. You look at the first half of the year, they have to play Arkansas on the road with an inexperienced secondary.
Right.
Then next week they have to play Florida, which is a legitimate national title contender. And then while they're playing Florida, South Carolina has got a bye getting ready for them. They have to go on the road and play South Carolina, their second or third road game in 4 weeks. That's a tough slate. And in the second half of the season, all the remaining opponents have a bye the week before playing Alabama. So it's a tough schedule. The last time an SEC team swept unbeaten through SEC play three straight years, 1983, that was 37 years ago, and Bama, of course, has done it two straight years. I wonder if it'll happen. I think the top two contenders for the title this year, and the two teams I have playing in the national title game, one of them comes from Big Ten country, and it is Ohio State.
Yeah.
Ohio State does have to play both Wisconsin and Iowa on the road, so it's not easy, and those are the top two contenders. In fact, Iowa's going to be a top ten team at the start of the year. Wisconsin will probably enter the AP poll at number 12, but my power ratings say Ohio State's got enough talent to win both of those games and get to the title game. And facing Ohio State in the title game this year, a little bit of a surprise pick, but not as much as some folks are making it out to be, and that's Oklahoma. Oklahoma lost five games last year, so folks are saying, how can a team with five losses win the national title? As we recall, when Ohio State won the national title, they were coming off a five-loss season just 2 years ago.
Right.
Georgia was the preseason number one team in the country. They were in the same division as Florida, had beaten Florida by double digits. Florida was off a four-loss season.
Mm-hmm.
I picked Florida number one, and the Gators didn't disappoint me. They won the national title.
Right.
Four times in the past decade, teams with four more losses won the title. And when you look at Oklahoma, they're the only team in my ratings that rank in the top 16 in all eight of my position categories in the front of the magazine.
Mm.
They're a team that didn't catch a lot of breaks last year. They had 42 starts lost to injury, including their Heisman Trophy winning quarterback. They're actually the best team statistically in the Big 12 at plus 133 yards per game, and they had a lot of close losses. And I look back
right.
at 2007 with Alabama. They had six losses that year. All six were by 7 points or less. And a lot of folks snickered when I wrote in the magazine that, you know, this is a team that was six plays away from being 13-0. And then folks
right.
laughed. The next year, Alabama goes 12-0.
Sure.
Oklahoma lost by one to BYU, one to Miami of Florida, three to Texas. They outgained first down Nebraska 23-7 and lost by seven.
Yeah.
They were much better than the record would indicate. And their schedule is not like Alabama. So I look for big things out of Oklahoma this year.
Two things I really love about the way you do this. One is that you don't just look at who's back and say what the record's going to be. You break down the schedule and not just look at who they're playing, but when they're playing them. And you talk about team coming off a bye week and being ready, psychology. You really look at all those factors. And you also mentioned something that I have quoted and attributed to you many times, and that is the close loss theory. And I know you have something in each issue where you talk about the number of close games a team loses and how sometimes there's a pendulum effect. And if a team wins a lot of those games, as Michigan State did in 2008, chances are they're going to lose a couple of them in 2009. Well, it turns out they lost almost all the close games. And so a team can either look a lot better or a lot worse than it really is.
Yeah, and it's something where I think it gives us a little bit of an advantage. And, you know, in the magazine, I do write each of the 120 team previews myself, so I put a lot of hours into this magazine each year. And this is one of the factors that I love, because I think the casual football fan, when they analyze a team for the upcoming season, they look at last year's record,
right.
and then they look at the quarterback, running back, receivers, and that's how they come upon their assessment. But when I look at a team, I put all the different units into account, but I also look at the fact that a team like Oklahoma last year, they were 5-3 in the Big 12, but the best team statistically, all those close losses, they were just a play or two away from actually being right there. And I was rooting for Texas in that game against Oklahoma last year because I picked Texas to play in the national title game, which they did. Oklahoma outplayed Texas with a backup quarterback last year, and I felt very fortunate at the end of the game that they won. So things like that are all factored in, and plus the turnovers equals turnaround equation. But I have found that close win, close loss category has been, look at Iowa. 2 years ago,
right.
Iowa had five losses, all five losses by 7 points or less.
Right.
Last year at the end of the season, they're playing for, they could have been undefeated had Stansy not got injured.
Sure, playing in the Orange Bowl and winning it.
Yeah.
Want to talk about a couple of local teams here, and a lot of optimism about Michigan State, in part because of the schedule, because they have nine games in the state of Michigan and don't have to leave the state until October 23rd. But with Kirk Cousins having the best year of any sophomore quarterback in history, with an amazingly deep core of receivers when you count the four tight ends, and Greg Jones in that linebacking core, obviously there are some questions, but Michigan State's in position where it could do some things.
Yeah, and I'm pretty optimistic, and I think Dan Antonio's done a very good job since he's been there. Hasn't had that big breakout season. 9-4 in 2008 was outstanding, but you know, now they have one quarterback. They've got a team leader, as opposed to last year when they were alternating two quarterbacks.
Right.
That led to a little bit of indecision. You touched on the receivers. This year's receiving core vastly upgraded over last year's. A lot more experience. Remember last year they signed those two super freshman running backs?
Yep.
Those guys are now sophomores. And Greg Jones coming back was just phenomenal. In fact, they have my number six linebacking core in the country. And when you factor in the schedule, you look at their first nine games this season, you know, I think they could match last year's 6-win total by the eighth week. There mm-hmm. is that possibility.
They don't play Ohio State. That helps, too.
Yeah, no Ohio State on the schedule. They do get Notre Dame at home. I think they'll be favored over Western Michigan, Florida Atlantic, Northern Colorado. The Wisconsin game, everybody's talking about how great Wisconsin is. And,
right.
you know, like I said, they're going to be number 12 at the start of the year. But I give Michigan State an excellent shot at beating Wisconsin in that game. They play Michigan on the road. It's a game Michigan State's won the last two. Illinois at Northwestern. These are all winnable football games.
Right.
And at the end of the schedule, you know, Minnesota and Purdue. So this is a team where when I go through and predict the team for the upcoming season, I only have them an underdog in three games.
Mm-hmm.
I do have a couple of toss-up games on the schedule.
Right.
But the three games I have an underdog are at Penn State, at Iowa, and at Michigan, just a three-point dog there.
Okay.
It's a team very capable of a big season.
Well, let's talk about Michigan, because a lot of people think that this is the year for Rich Rodriguez. He either has to put up or shut up and maybe pack up. But in terms of what's going to happen and with the NCAA sanctions not having an immediate direct impact on this year's team, but what is all that going to mean, and how much better do you see the Wolverines being without the likes of Brandon Graham?
Yeah, it's hard to believe that with Brandon Graham on that defense, they allowed 393 yards per game last year. And it's almost scary to think what they'd be like without him. But I think this year's defense, a little better overall depth. I thought the one part they were really missing was some speed at linebacker. That should be upgraded a little bit this season. And keep in mind, this is a Michigan team that at one point last year was 5-2, and they're saying, well, we could be in a January 1 bowl game until the bottom fell out in the second half of the year. It was absolutely mind-boggling to me to see them finish last in the Big Ten and worst in the yards per game at minus 107.3. That was worse than any other team out there. But it is the third year of Rich Rod. Last year he had a couple of two true freshman quarterbacks. Now they're sophomores, so that's an advantage. I think the offense will be more potent. Defensively, despite the loss of Graham, let's face it, this defense couldn't be any worse than last year's D. I think they're going to improve statistically there. And I would put the magic number for Rich Rod sticking around at 8. I think if it's 7 wins at the end of the year, that means they went 6-6 in the regular season and won their bowl game, big deal. Or they went 7-5 in the regular season and lost their bowl game. Either way, 7-6 not going to cut it for Michigan. I think they have to get to 8 for him to stick around, and I do believe they have that possibility. The three games I have them an underdog in this year are at Notre Dame, at Penn State, at Ohio State, and they've got three crucial toss-up games on the schedule. Iowa at Purdue, and then Wisconsin at home. And they get the two big boys there at home. The Michigan State game's a tight one, but I think they'll have to start winning some of those close ones. I actually projected them out to go to the Gator Bowl this year and play LSU.
Well, I think a lot of Michigan fans would take that right now.
Yes, they would.
We saw an analysis in the Detroit News this week where they ranked the top 25 players in the Big Ten, and there was not a single representative from the University of Michigan. And as I told my partner, Tom, I can't remember the last time that Michigan did not have one of the top 25 players. You may question that list. You may have a Michigan player or two on it, but do you remember a time where Michigan didn't have anyone you could talk about in terms of All-America caliber?
We could probably go back to the 1800s and see that hasn't happened. I cannot imagine that coming out. And a lot of that's the product of last year's poor season. And, I quickly just scanned down my first team All-Big Ten, and guess what? No Michigan players made the list. There's potential there. And I think somebody's going to emerge and get there by the end of the season. But, I didn't put any of the Michigan players' first team All-Big Ten, and I can't even imagine that happening in the past.
In terms of the other teams in the Big Ten, before we let you go, Phil, and I'm a big Kirk Ferentz guy. I think that for Iowa, given their natural recruiting base, to finish in the top 8 in the polls four times in the last 8 years tells you an awful lot about a coach. And they haven't been great every year, but they've been better than a lot of people would think. And if he can do that again and win another Big Ten championship, I think it's an amazing accomplishment for Iowa.
Well, I think if he's going to win a Big Ten title, it should be this year, because he has got the schedule to do it. You know, when you look at the top teams in the Big Ten this season, you've got your Penn States, Ohio States, Wisconsin's will all be ranked. in the top 15, 17 in the country, the top four ranked teams there. Iowa gets the other three all at home. They host Penn State, Ohio State, and Wisconsin.
Right.
Last year, you know, as I mentioned, at the end of the season, prior to losing Stansy against Northwestern, they had climbed to number seven, and when you said if they went out, they might have been playing even in the national title game.
And they took Ohio State to overtime on the road without their quarterback.
With a backup quarterback, yeah, that was a remarkable accomplishment there. And then how about that bowl game against Georgia Tech?
Yeah.
Georgia Tech comes in with this potent offense, and they just shut them down, 155 yards. Nine first downs, and I think maybe a couple of big plays were the key to that. So this is a dangerous Iowa team. You know, we talked about Greg Jones coming back. Well, Adrian Claiborne came back for Iowa on the defensive end slot. They have my number three rated defensive line, number five set of DBs, my number 13 special teams. The quarterback position, running back position, both solid. My biggest question mark with the team is the offensive line.
Right.
While they have two starters back, they lose 128 career starts to graduation.
Wow.
So it's a lot less experienced line. But, you know, last year's O-line wasn't exactly overwhelming. They only averaged 3.3 yards per carry. That's going to be the key, how Iowa's offensive line stacks up this year. But when you look at their schedule, Big Ten title is a possibility.
Phil Steele, our guest, and there's no one better in the country breaking down these teams. Does a tremendous amount of research. Phil, before we let you go, tell all our listeners how they can get the magazine. What's the easiest way for them to have all this information at their fingertips?
Well, I really appreciate that. The magazine, Phil Steele's College Football Preview, 328 pages. And while that's about 100 pages more than the competition, it's got 3 to 4 times the amount of information because we just pack it with info on top of info. And the thing I like about it, as compared to, let's say, the Blue Ribbon magazine, is all the information's in the same spot on every page. You want to know who the starting left tackle is? You just flip to the team page, you know exactly where to look. You want to know how many yards rushing a team had last year or even 3 years ago, you know exactly where to look. You want to find a final score of a game from 4 years ago, you know exactly where to look on every page. And I think it's like having 120 different media guides rolled into one. We also have, in the SEC, Big East, ACC Regional, 125 full pages on all the 1AA teams. Now, for more information on the magazines, you can go to the website, which is philsteele.com. And when you go to philsteele.com, you can not only get information on how to order the magazines, but you get great football information up there every day. Up there, I put up a daily blog with football information every single day. So head to philsteele.com. The magazine is right now at all the bookstores out there, also at Walmart's this year. And all I ask is if you do go to a bookstore, open up a copy, compare it to every other magazine on the newsstand. I think you'll see easily 3 to 4 times the amount of information.
And we're going to have a couple copies to give away to our listeners, too, as we do each year. Phil, thanks so much. We'll talk to you again before the season's over.
Hey, that sounds great. I love doing the show with you. It's always a lot of fun each and every year.
All right. Jack Ebling here with Dave Benton. We'll be right back with our final segment, the Jack and Tom Show, 1320 WILS.